I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Dave and Degenovic. A new conversation.
All right, here we go.
On KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM. Dave and Dujanovic have inside sources.
Here's the proof that I listen to Boyd Matheson every afternoon on Inside Sources on my way home. David, I was listening yesterday afternoon. I could not believe this wild statistic that Boyd just threw out on the radio. And I'm like, we have got to talk about that. Boyd has got to be around for our show tomorrow. The U.S. saw the biggest revenue surge since 1977 when it comes to the collection of our taxes. So that's 44 years. They jumped 18%. It jumped 18%. $627 million.
Billion dollars.
Thank goodness Boyd's here. This is incredible. I mean, they are rolling in the dough. Question is, does that mean we have a spending problem?
I thought you were going to say, do we have a surplus? No. $600 billion. That doesn't even do a dent. But I think if you listen to politicians as they're spending money, and especially this presidency, they've said the way we afford all of these programs is to build the economy up, make more money so we get more tax revenue. That's the way they're going to pay for things. Well, this was historic, and we got $600 billion more dollars, but we're spending trillions. Okay, Boyd. That's what we hear, right?
Yeah.
If the economy comes back and everybody's making more money and the wages go up, then we will get more tax money.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, the case is really being made in Congress that we need to raise taxes, especially on the wealthy. And yet this actually shows the very opposite is the reality. So you would think that there was a tax cut. So you would think that would produce less tax revenue. We have a pandemic. We have all kinds of inflation and things going on. A global economy is in tatters. So all of that would say, oh, well, they're going to get less in tax revenue. And yet they got more.
People were laid off. Businesses shut down. I mean, is there – why?
It's a really simple rule. And it is you can only get – regardless of how high you set the tax rate – you can never get more than 35% out of people. And some people say it's even closer to 25%. Because what happens is, and this actually goes back to the 1920s. Andrew Mellon was the Treasury Secretary and incredibly wealthy. This is the Mellon family. Big, big money. And they said, what should the top tax rate be? And he said 25%. And they said, well, why 25%? And he said, because after 25%, then we start to do whatever we have to do to not pay more taxes. 25% below, they just pay it because it's easier and it's less hassle and it's less expensive for them to just pay it. And so this idea that we have to tax the rich to bring in more revenue is a fallacy. We tax cut, bad economy, and yet we had over $4 trillion come into the Treasury in tax revenue. And by the way, 80% of that came from the top 10% of earners. So you can't say that the wealthy aren't paying their taxes. When those rates are in the right window, they do pay their taxes, and they don't take advantage of all the loopholes and all the other things.
25% then. That's the one that everyone just sucks up and pays for.
Yeah, you just do it.
Right? But when you look at a 40% tax bracket,
yep,
right? It's 37 now. President Biden wants to raise it to almost 40. Then all of a sudden you start seeing, okay, well, I'm going to tax shelter it here and tax shelter it there. And
all the loopholes, all the little things that...
Because now it's worth it to pay the accountant or the team of accountants
yeah.
millions of dollars, because it's like, I would rather not pay... I'd rather pay them and not pay you.
Yep. That's exactly right. And so then it actually comes all the way full circle back to what Debbie started with in terms of, if we had $4 trillion come in, how in the world are we still running such deficits? So it's not that we have a tax or a revenue problem. The revenue's there. The revenue's pouring in. We have a spending problem of saying, oh, well, we'll just keep spending and everything's going to be fine.
Did we spend because we got all the stimulus money and then it's all coming through like sales taxes and they're getting their cut there just because the government just dumped millions and billions and trillions of dollars into the economy through all their programs?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that's really what impacted a lot of the spending that brought in that kind of tax okay. revenue. And so it seems to me that it's just more this mentality of, look, if it's in a reasonable rate, and if I think it's okay, then I'm going to do it. Otherwise, I'm going to find every loophole. I'm going to go through all the things to get those deductions and so on, or move things offshore or internationally. And so it just seems that we need to come back and rethink that, hey, just because you're cutting taxes, you may get more revenue. I know it's counterintuitive, but it's often what businesses do.
Well, you're talking about about taxes and how people avoid them. I know this friend of mine who lives in California. We know the taxes in California are monstrous,
crazy.
Right?
Yep.
It was more affordable for him to buy a sailboat, and then he turned the sailboat into his business office. That's where he held business offices. Come down to the dock. Come onto my sailboat, the slip, everything I can write off as a business expense now.
Yeah.
And guess what? He has a sailboat.
Yeah.
I guess he gets an A in creativity.
Hey, you know who else has that?
Who's that?
Senator Joe Manchin. He stays on his boat.
Boyd Matheson, Inside Sources today at 1 o'clock. We got to get to some big breaking news right now. I've been reading through some court documents while the two of you talked. We have an official charging document now in the murder of University of Utah football player Aaron Lowe. The charges filed today. Criminal homicide, aggravated murder is one count. There are a number of other counts as well. But I want to get to some of the details in the probable cause statement, which is a lengthy description of what happened last night. I've been able to read through this very quickly, Dave. I can tell you that some video from a cell phone camera was very imperative in this police investigation into finding and tracking down the suspect. Book is his name. We've reported on this extensively, that somebody had captured video of a male wearing a dark shirt, according to court documents, and light pants walking across the street toward Aaron Lowe and also a female victim. They named the female victim. We have not officially named her, I don't believe, here at KSL News Radio in this probable cause statement. So we now have a name of the woman who was shot as well. And they also say that there was somebody at the party that was sitting in a detached garage who had looked like a handgun or some sort of a gun in a sling bag, and that a male was witnessed reaching into that sling bag and taking out a gun. And it also appears that multiple witnesses stated that prior to the shooting, and this is right in the court documents, they observed a verbal altercation between Aaron Lowe and a group of males, black males, that were in the area or at the party, and that the argument had taken place near Aaron Lowe's vehicle. Of course, Aaron Lowe shot and killed a couple of weeks ago at a house party or right near a house party in the Sugar House area. It was on a Saturday night into Sunday morning that this happened. Of course, he played for the University of Utah. And recently, players had gone from the University of Utah to his funeral in Texas.
Yeah, a heartbreaking story, but we're starting to learn more about what exactly happened, because I think when we first heard about it, was it a gang shooting? Was it a drive-by? No, it turned out to be more execution style, where he was shot, and then the suspect walks up to them closer, point blank.
I'm reading more information right now on the female victim, where detectives were able to approach her at Intermount Medical Center. And it said that she was able to communicate some information to police. And I think that speaks to why police had said during the course of their investigation, they talked about protecting witnesses.
Yeah. Intimidation.
And making sure people felt free to come forward with information. This is a very, very lengthy court document we just got in-house here at KSL News Radio that officially charges in the murder, in the homicide of Aaron Lowe, and with other counts as well as attempted criminal homicide, or purchase and transfer and possession of use of a firearm by a restricted person, and obstruction of justice.
Dave and Dujanovic.
Tim and Amanda here with breaking updates. Mornings from 5 to 9.
Then from 3 to 7, it's Jeff Kaplan and his Minute of News.
We're all on KSL News Radio.
Utah's all-day companion for news.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.